You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro, who's the Deputy Chairman of Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. David, a couple of sets of results came out today. In fact, not sets of results, there was a trading update, another one from Sasol. The share price doing absolutely nothing on the back of it.
Yeah, I think maybe the market had already anticipated that this was going to happen. They don't give a lot of detail around why the numbers will be down and what's going to push them down, merely referring to the kind of restructure or issues that delayed the account. So there's not a lot that you can get your teeth into and understand. You know, from my point of view, okay, well, let's give them 1 6 months. Next 6 months, things better happen. I think Lindsay, what's interesting is a lot of analysts are far more optimistic than is being priced in at the moment. And I think that a lot of the optimism comes from a time when Lake Charles is going to start producing cash and earnings. And I think they are discounting that to today's price and saying, look, if they do meet those targets, then the share price is quite reasonable. But there's no guarantee what lies ahead. So I think the market's still hesitant and says, well, let's wait and see for the next couple of years when they bulk up and get those kind of results. So there's still the jury's still out in Sasol, and you know they're still trading below 300.
Yeah, 282 as we pre-record, David. What would you do with it, if anything?
It doesn't interest me. You know, I don't. It's too uncertain. There's too many doubts about it. I admit if they can ramp up Lake Charles and they can get a lot of other issues right, then there could be something there. But you got time on your side. You don't have to rush into this one. And we've been let down on so many occasions that we're not sure what does lie ahead.
Okay.
There are plenty of others. You want a decent oil company or gas company, you can go to Royal Dutch Shell and get a 7% yield.
Yeah, very true. Yeah, okay. Well, that's a good point you've just made. Let's have a look at Pepkor, if we can, because the thing that really startled me, I mean, they're a respectable set of numbers, not too bad, but what startled me was that they opened 338 stores in the period. I was mentioning, that's almost one a day. They've now got nearly 5,500 shops. It's massive.
I also realize that number of 338, that's more than one every working day.
Yes, indeed.
And which is quite incredible. And you wonder where they find the locations and how they actually coordinate that. You know, it's global, but whatever it is, it must take a massive amount of work to actually get those stocked up, connected computer-wise. You know, the logistics behind each store. So, yeah, you know, good for them, I mean, for doing that. I've always liked Pepkor as almost a defensive play, but the market a little hesitant on the share price. It's up 1.5% on those numbers. They did write off quite a bit on their building side, you know, which doesn't come into the actual number, to the headline earnings numbers. It comes into earnings. So earnings are down considerably because they had to write that off. But, I mean, you can't fault it. It's it's doing okay. I think the danger, Lindsay, is that they're at the bottom end of the market, the low end of the market, and that's where the layoffs are taking place, and that's where the stress is. So they do give warnings. You know, they give warnings about what lies ahead, but, you know, they use the word cautiously optimistic about what lies ahead. So I'm not sure, you know, what does lie ahead. So it's in a tough economy.
I read that this morning as well, and it seems to contradict itself. There's one paragraph, which is one long sentence, which says, we don't think things are going to get any better, but we're optimistic. So it's almost as I said one thing and then are thinking another. I didn't quite understand it.
Well, there you have to go. In those conditions, you've got to go steal market share from somebody else. And that's normally on price. It means you have to discount. You have to discount quite a lot and pull your prices down and that in order to get the volumes. So I think that's what everybody fears, that, you know, what might happen.
Okay, Invicta, that was a former darling and it's fallen on hard times. Is there any hope there?
I don't know. You know, I looked at that one. Yes, it's an improvement from last year. But, I mean, if you compare it with 2 years ago, it's been a big, big fall. You know, Goldstone has always been a person who's been very forthright. when you read, it's not a you've got to go into the detailed report. Normally, he's quite more outspoken about issues. But he does point out, you know, there's a lack of infrastructure, demise of the construction, downturn in Asian markets, drought in South Africa, you know, in the agricultural sector. That's where they sell all their capital equipment on the engineering side. Sorry, uncertainty in the industrial and mining sectors, etc. So he does point a rather gloomy backdrop to running this business, which I think we see in Hudeco as well. You know, it's very difficult for them to operate in this, in these kind of circumstances. But it's a company I've always liked, you know, in terms of management. But I mean, if you look at the last 5 years, I was looking at their peak in around about 2014. They're down 80%.
Yeah,
and it's. Lindsay, it speaks to what's happened in the mining and industrial sector. You know, we don't understand how that sector has been absolutely devastated and destroyed, and that goes to the construction companies as well. And to turn that around, you've lost skills. You know, you've lost confidence. It's going to take an enormous effort, and we haven't got the money. You know, we haven't got the money just to suddenly light this up again. So it's a worrying, you know, when you read these kind of results. These are really worrying results.
Yeah, they are. But again, people, deep value investors will say, look, good management. When the economy turns around, they will be poised for greatness, as they say. Now then, here's one that came out just over an hour ago, and this came from nowhere. And the boards of Prosus and MIH Food Delivery Holdings note the publication earlier today of Just Eat Circular and Takeaway.com's announcement in response to MIH's cash offer for Just Eat. In brackets, the Prosus offer. Neither of these documents change Prosus's view that the Prosus offer is superior to the Takeaway.com offer and removes the downside risk for shareholders in Just Eat, a business that requires substantial investment to defend its position and capitalize on its long-term opportunities. So am I reading this right? Someone's come in and there's a bidding war going on.
Yes, it is a bidding war. And both are going to put down firm offers. And I'm not sure who's going to win. But so it's out there. They've got to come with a superior offer, and they've got to convince the shareholders to Just Eat shareholders to, you know, to. Oh, sorry, that's right. Prosus will continue to, you know, to tell them to reject it. But I mean, that's up to Takeaway. You know, Takeaway are also going to go out there and tell them why Just Eat should actually accept it. So. This is a bidding war. This becomes nasty. As long as Bob van Dijk doesn't get attracted to overpay, which normally happens because ego takes place, you know, ego takes over.
Speaking of Bob van Dijk, he says the following. While historically Just Eat has been a strong business, today it is at an important inflection point. Just Eat's board is now acknowledging the increased investment required and the impact that this will have on their profit pool, but in our view continues to underestimate the severity of the competitive pressure and the urgency of the investment need. So they're saying that this is quite a chunky deal, but it's going to be even chunkier by the time we sort this operation out. And maybe it's a bit of a stretch, actually, when you look at that statement.
Well, he's actually telling the Just Eat's board that they don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
He's saying, listen, you boys don't know. That's not really. This is what's going to happen, and you better be aware of it. So, look, it's a fight. I mean, this is how businesses are won and lost. And, you know, at the end, it comes up to the shareholders. They come down to the shareholders. They've got to decide who they're going to go with and which offer they will go with. I suppose at the end, they will accept what's more attractive to them. You know, once they accept an offer, they're gone.
Yeah, true enough. Anyway, that is one to watch. It should be very interesting.
I don't know enough about delivery. You know, I see a lot of chaps here who are becoming menaces on the road, dig in and out of, you know, the equivalent of the taxis delivering food. And I know it's very popular, and it's becoming more and more popular, delivery of food. But is it a kind of business that's sustainable? What is the cost of entering? That's what always worries me when I look at these. What is the actual cost? Bob van Dijk says, listen, it requires huge amount of capital investment, and therefore you do need you know, deep pockets. But I just look and see how difficult is it. You know, it's not a. It doesn't appear to me to be a very, very high-tech business that's going to change the world. But anyway, He knows more than me, and I have to concede in this respect.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the system's in the background. It sounds easy. You know, you phone up somebody or you order it online, a bike goes off to your chosen restaurant and then comes around half an hour later with a chicken curry or something. But the systems behind it, there must be something more to it than what we've just speculated upon.
Yeah. And you need mass. You know, you need global mass or critical mass to make it a business. And Uber's still battling with it. Let's see what happens. He believes that it's a very good business, and we've got to go with him. That's what makes stock market investing so interesting. You know, you've got to take a calculated bet.
Mm. What else are you seeing, David? It's getting to that time of year now where I think most of the results are out, and we're drifting into December. Mm. I noticed the S&P futures, they're going to be, the real market will be open in 15 minutes' time, but the futures are very close to all-time record highs again, up 9, 10 points, and keeps on going, as we say.
You know, we're looking into New Year.
Yes.
We're looking, and this is what we're consuming at the moment. All the major houses are now coming out with how they see 2020. And to be honest, I think there's an element of fatigue. You know, there are no new stories. It's very hard to get enthusiastic about it simply because it's being held aloft by very low interest rates, low inflation. There isn't growth. I'm doing quite a bit of work, and if I had to summarize it into a soundbite, it's buy equities because you're not going to get yields anywhere else. You know, your yields are going to be very low, and it's almost, well, this is the best alternative is to buy good dividend yields. But there's so many things that we're going to be cautious of. You know, we don't know where the election in the US is going to go. If you do get Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders, you know, who's going socialistic, then all the tax, even the Democrats come in, all the tax concessions get reversed, tax cuts, and so many things can happen that you've got to literally play it day by day, as we see in Brexit. So it's not easy. I think if we've been in the market and you've got a little bit of, you've made profits or you've got some margin behind you, it's easy. If you're entering for the first time, I think it's a very difficult period to go into the market.
Yeah, it is. Talking about the US race for the presidency, Michael Bloomberg has thrown his hat into the ring as well. I wonder, he's got so much money. I just wonder how much credibility he has apart from the money aspect.
He's got a lot of credibility. He ran New York very well.
Mm.
He was a very popular mayor. And a very centrist, you know, he was in the middle. He did for New York what New York wanted, you know, what New York needed, should I say this way. And he's a very good speaker. He's liked by the business world, and he's not Bernie. He's not Elizabeth Warren. He's someone who can take on Trump intellectually, in fact, I don't think you need to be that clever. But nevertheless, I think he's. You know what I mean? He can stand up and actually challenge him with facts. Not only that, he's 5 times richer than Trump, maybe 10 times richer than Trump, you know, depending. His worth, we know, which is close to $55 billion. So he's no slump. Of course, that's angering the Democrats, you know, because, I mean, the other contenders, you know, this is becoming a billionaires club. But, I mean, I think he's the kind of person that I would like to see win because he's sensible. And, you know, I've seen the impact in New York of what he has done, you know, in the years that he was there. And he's really, you know, along the way in New York, he turned it into a really superb city. I know it's gone down a little bit with de Blasio, but still I think the impact felt of his mayorship.
Okay, interesting one to watch for the next few months. And David, interesting to see what's going to happen in the Premiership, the football, that is, the football Premiership's a merry-go-round of managers. I've just seen the odds. It's 1-4 Marco Silva to get the boot, which sounds almost inevitable after losing to Norwich on Saturday. It's 5-1 Unai Emery of Arsenal. It's 5-1 Manuel Pellegrini of West Ham, and 16-1. The outsider is Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and he was saved, I think, yesterday by those 3 goals in 7 minutes.
Yeah.
That was a good, fun game, but I still think the Pochettino could be going that way.
To United.
That's
interesting. Yeah. Mm. I like Pochettino, and I know that, you know, once a team starts losing, as we've seen with Arsenal, just cut your losses. They've lost control. I think I haven't seen an Arsenal team as bad as this for years, even under the worst of Wenger. And I jokingly tweeted, I said, you've got Arsenal at 8, 9 is Man United, 10 is Spurs. I mean, what are they competing for? Europa League, you know, that's it. Can you imagine that? That's what they're doing. They should it continue like this, they won't even qualify Europa. And it's really tragic that you can get Sheffield United, a bunch of a newly promoted side, can play with such vigor and heart and talent. You know, we've seen it in Leicester. Look at Leicester, the revival. So it's a very strange season. I enjoyed the Chelsea match. I enjoyed that. You know, I thought it was a very pulsating game. And I like Frank Lampard. I've always liked him. I always liked him as a player. And I wish him success.
He's going to go right to the top. He's going to go right to the top. Yeah. This is only his second season as a manager. He was with Derby County. You know, he's going to go right to the top. Anyway, David, thank you very much for your time. David Shapiro is from Sasfin Securities, and that was Shapiro World. That podcast was proudly brought to you in association with sharenet.co.za. Visit strictlybusinesspodcast.com and subscribe to receive exclusive content straight to your inbox. strictlybusinesspodcast.com, made possible by Prudential Investment Managers.